to me.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noel, and I'd like to welcome you to today's program. Broadcasting live and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. Today, no guests because we have a lot of important issues to discuss. And on several, I'm going to ask you specifically for your input. One of those will be from a major player in the world of genetic engineering. He is an Oxford University professor, chairman of a department, and also he is the editor-in-chief of the Journal of Medical Ethics. And I'll tell you what he wants us to do to help our children. I'll ask you to call in and share your points of view. My second issue that I'm going to ask for talk back today is the shock and humiliation, how people are being strip-searched for trivial offenses, from The Nation magazine, from Herman Schwartz. Now, having watched this myself, having seen what they're now doing in airports routinely, having seen situations that would not historically have required people to be humiliated, then why are we doing it now? And what can we as citizens do about it? Today I'll be continuing with my ongoing series on a different look at human nature. This is probably going to take the better part of 6 months, once or twice a week. And I want to take my time and evolve the historical background of how we ended up today making the choices we do, either good or bad choices, while we're either making choices that keep us well or actually cause us to be sick, help us be able to save some money or end up causing our bankruptcy, helping us develop really quality relationships or constantly self-sabotaging our relationships. All this we're going to deal with in this series. So today I'm going to take on one more journey, and I would hope that if you have a younger person, meaning under 30, that if they can listen to the show live, or as 95% of the people do, download it in the evening, that's fine too, because they're going to better understand why my generation, the baby boomers, what mistakes we made that impacted them, that they really had no choice in. But now we're blaming them for what we actually created and what we can do about it. Then from our Michael Rupert, for knowledge of 9/11 by Western intelligence agencies, and also what they did to a person that challenged up on the internet the pre-existing knowledge of 9/11 by a former Marine, and they put him in a mental institution. Is he mental? Not at all. So we have a lot to share. Let's begin. And always I like to look at the issues that involve our health and well-being. When I was preparing for my program on drugging of our children, this goes back about 8 years ago, I took about 3 years in prep and filming, I was invited to a school in Florida that almost all the kids there had been diagnosed with either ADD or ADHD. And the principal invited me, and then I spent a couple days. And when I asked, what do you do concerning diet? And the answer was, well, why? And I said, well, what if, I'm just asking it as a question, what if the child's behavior is directly related to diet, like caffeine and artificial sweeteners, aspartame, which is a neurotoxin, or caffeine itself? Well, they hadn't thought about that. So I then asked, would they do an experiment? And then at the same time, because I was working in some school systems, I asked some other people. And I was working with a charter school, two charter schools, in fact, and one charter school in Newark, New Jersey, very poor. All the parents in the charter school were under the poverty level. I asked, would you get the whole congregation together, the students, the parents, the teachers, administrators, and they agreed. Now, they didn't do that in Florida, but some of the teachers did, and some of the students did. And what happened was something that I thought we should pay attention to. First, I ask everyone to list all their health problems. Diabetes, overweight, how long they'd had these, what their medical diagnoses were, and they almost always had many. And then specifically, what was the diagnosis of your children? Almost all had been diagnosed with either minimal brain dysfunction, learning disabilities, delayed learning, or ADD or ADHD. At the end of a year of meeting with them monthly and helping them change their lifestyle, it was something. First, in Florida, we saw a remarkable turnaround in a lot of students. They no longer were bouncing off the walls, as one teacher said. In fact, his own kids were normal, where before they were not. And then I said, okay, if this was a brain chemical imbalance, just changing the diet would not have relieved that. So let us accept that in these children's cases, minimal brain dysfunction or some form of learning disability due to brain chemical imbalance was not the true and underlying condition. In fact, it was simply lifestyle. They agreed, and I said, could you now share this with other parents? Not all parents were open to this. Not all teachers were open to this. Some teachers and parents believed that, A, it was no one's business what they fed their kids or themselves, and B, they didn't believe it. Fine. But for those who did, those are the ones whose kids are no longer diagnosed and treated and taking Ritalin and other drugs. But the largest single example of a massive shift was when an entire school, the faculty, students, and parents, all did the same protocol, and then the administrator of the school, Verna Gray, was there on a biweekly basis to hold small support meetings to encourage people about how you make junky foods get out of your diet and bring in healthy, tasty foods, but do it in a transitional way so people don't feel they're being deprived or punished. We filmed it. I haven't shown it yet. It's just been sitting there like a lot of other things I film. I just don't have the venue right now to share it, but I will. The students, at least 85% of the students now, you would never be able to diagnose with ADD or ADHD. They are normal. Their study habits improved. Their health habits improved. In fact, here's what was remarkable. The students, unbeknownst to me, asked, could they get up and talk about what they did? Not only were they able to help themselves, the kids, some as young as 6, 8, 10, 12 years old, were then helping their parents. And some of these families didn't have a father, they just had a mother. In one case, and specifically, the mother was about 240 pounds. She had diabetes, high blood pressure. She had retinopathy. She had lower back pain. She had very bad arthritis in her knees. Within that year, her daughter, who made changes, was able to help the mother because the daughter would go and do the shopping and then help the mom do the food prep. They did it together. And now the mother is no longer diagnosed with diabetes, no longer has elevated cholesterol, blood pressure, that's all normal, dropped over 80 pounds, and then the mother got up and spoke. And it was just one child after another. So to Verna Gray, and to her charter school, and to the teachers, and the other people and the parents in Newark, congratulations on showing what is possible. Now, here's the lesson for all the other teachers in our audience and principals. Why not contact her and ask? She has the protocols. She has all this documented. Share it. Let others know what was possible. Because you're not talking about one or two or five children or two adults. You're talking about hundreds of parents and children all changed together and have sustained it. So that's good. I say that because this is the latest. This is from Jackie Carr, Natural News. I'll quote it. Destroying children with the cloak of ADHD, parents need to pay attention. ADHD, your child, drugs, corruption. These are words that should not be in the same sentence, or same conversation for that matter. Last month, a study was published that makes it questionable whether this generation of children stands even a remote fighting chance against the pharmaceutical companies. They do if their parents are informed. Let us start with the conclusion of the study. Quote, later start of stimulant drug treatment of attention hyperactivity disorders associated with academic decline in mathematics, end quote. What's it mean in lay language? It means this. If you want your children to do well in school, you need to get them on stimulant drugs as early as possible, hopefully while they're still in the womb. That was one of the researchers on the study received funding from the pharmaceutical company that makes drugs to treat ADHD. Not only is everything I just told you wrong, in my opinion, it is criminally wrong. It should be outright illegal to have such a conflict of interest where the person writing that you should get your kids on drugs so they can do better in school, and then they get money from the pharmaceutical company making the stimulant drug. Well, that's a gross conflict of interest, and yet that is rampant in proprietary science today. The statistics are out of control and climbing. Almost 1 in 10 children in the United States are diagnosed with ADD and ADHD, and over 65% of them are currently on prescription medication. Now, how many kids are there in the United States? Well, let's try 65 million between birth and 18 years of age. That's a big market. And pharmaceutical companies, greedy and stupid, oh, how redundant is that? Doctors, pediatricians, scientists, they all just leave their consciousness, ethics, and intelligence at the door. It's just a profit stream. So they'll say anything, do anything to make sure that your kid and you are supporting them. Medications don't have side effects. I want this audience to understand that. This is an oxymoron. This is like our president saying clean coal. Yeah? And how stupid, Mr. President, you think we all are? No, some of us actually still retain some gray matter and aren't willing to be supplicants to that kind of smooth, as Neil going through Vaseline approach that you and others have, who are charismatic leaders and care not about the morality of your decisions and impact upon others. There are no side effects to drugs, sir. There are only effects. Let me repeat that. There are no side effects. There are only effects. Now, the question is, which person will end up with an effect that is more adverse than someone else taking the drug? Does it mean if something is a toxin and someone doesn't get sick that it is less toxic? What it means is that each one of us has a different tolerance for an effect, and therefore we don't always manifest it. Much like my older brother, Howard. Howard was 5 years my senior. As my big brother and the respect and I love that I had for him, you have no idea the frustration it was every time I asked my brother, Howard, why do you smoke? And he said, it relaxes me, and besides, there's no harm to it. He says, look, I, you know, my lungs are fine. I said, yes, Howard, they will be fine until you have cancer. When you are building towards a tipping in anything, you're completely unaware of it. The coughing, when your lungs are irritated, long ago you don't cough, so you think there's no longer a problem. Yes, there is. It's just that your lungs develop a callousness towards that. They adapt. But adaptation against toxins is always a negative adaptation. It is never positive. And sure enough, the day came when suddenly he had his cancer. He had his throat cancer and his voice box cancer, then his lung cancer. And that's the way it always happens. But up to that moment, people live in denial. They don't want to acknowledge that what they're doing can contribute to something. So what do you think it happens when a child is taking Ritalin every day, or Prozac, or Paxil? It's not, are they having adverse effects? Every drug gives you adverse effects. These are the effects. It's just that not everyone will manifest the effect immediately. If everyone manifested what we call the side effects immediately, there'd be no drug allowed in the United States. So that's how we conveniently, through the process of Orwellian doublethink and doublespeak, how we say, oh, that group over there that got the vaccines and ended up with brain damage, well, we're going to compensate them, but that doesn't affect the rest of you. The rest of you are actually protected with the herd concept. Well, tomorrow I'm going to have a scientist on, a leading immunologist, who will blow a hole through that whole argument. But how do you know that someone else will end up with a side effect or an effect 5 years from now? So our mindset is, if you don't have cancer from a cigarette today, or don't have liver disease today after drinking the alcohol, or if you don't end up with a fatty heart today from eating the hamburger, if you don't end up with BC today by eating the box of chocolates, then you're not going to. How smart is that? It isn't. But that's adaptive psychology, so the masses can engage in something that they like or want or have been conditioned to believe is for them their best interest. It is not. Back to ADHD. So here we are. Medicines that children are on will cause damage. It's just, will it be irreversible or not? It will trigger autoimmune disorders. It will cause insomnia, stomach disorders. And yet, we see quotes like this, quote, "There are obvious benefits of getting started sooner rather than later," end quote. J. Ramsey, Russell Ramsey says in Reuters Health, quote, "The studies ADHD at the University of Pennsylvania Perelman Medical Center in Philadelphia." Well, in the Reuters article entitled, quote, "Early ADHD treatment may ward off problems in school," end quote, they start off by suggesting that kids will have trouble in school if they are not on drugs before the age of 11 or 12. One tries to be, quote, "objective journalist" and just report the facts, but at times like this, it gets challenging. The massive sugar spikes that are getting hit with every day in our bodies, hyperactive reactions to gluten, which is making its way to the top of the highly inflammatory food list, liters of soda pop that create brain malfunction, rocket fuel in our water supply that causes every kid in the system to end up with some form of malfunction, excitotoxins, hormones, steroids by the animal products they're eating, the chemical cocktail sprayed on the fruits and vegetables that they are eating. The list is just too big. And yet, this, we're told, doesn't impact your child at all. This doesn't cause foggy brains, blood sugar imbalances, depression, ADHD. No, that's all caused simply because your kid has the wrong genes. No, it has nothing in the world to do with your genes. Nothing. It has everything to do with the fact you're being lied to every day, constantly, by everyone who can possibly benefit from reaching you in a governmental or major food industry. So now they've convinced the parents that if your child isn't studying the right way, acting the right way, speaking to you in the right way, keeping the room a certain clean, a level of cleanliness in the right way, that they have to be diagnosed, put on drugs for their good. And if you do, they'll study better. Is the science on their side? No science is on their side. And what passes as science is just an absolute, willful, wanton distortion of truth. That's where we're at today. So I don't believe that ADHD is a legitimate disease. What I do believe is a legitimate disease today is the majority of medical and scientific practice. That's the disease, and truth is its only cure. Next up, you ever heard of a wheat belly? Well, five clues that your excess weight could be caused by gluten. Here they are. High blood sugar, skin problems, rashes, acne, eczema, bouts of anxiety and depression, low energy, gut disorders like yeast infections, and also dementia. All those can be due to gluten and having an effect in your gut and changing the quality of your gut bacteria, which in turn impacts your entire system. Remember, visceral fat, the fat that you actually see on your body, acts as a gland. The fat itself secretes hormones that make the immune system react. This produces more fat to store and protects pathogens from invading our organs. And it's the proverbial vicious cycle, and it also produces low-level chronic inflammation that can result in various autoimmune diseases. And that's some P.F. Lewis, Natural News. And finally, from our health segment here, something that we rarely see, and that's people consuming raw, cold-pressed almond oil. Here's the reason why the almond oil is good for you. This is from Missouri University of Sciences and Technology, and it was presented at the American Society of Microbiology's general meeting this week. Quote, oil derived from the seeds of the wild almond trees could be the future weapon in the battle against obesity and diabetes. The key to the oil's potential lies in its ability to affect certain microorganisms living in our bodies. And these microorganisms can be impacted by that oil. Well, now, here's something else that can be impacted. How about almost every system in your body is impacted by the flora? So when you're eating healthy foods, living foods, clean foods, lots of juices, raw foods, lots of them, cruciferous foods, lots of berries, the whole grains, like one of the best is red quinoa, very easy to digest, millet, very easy to digest, very tasty, then your body is being nourished with the healthy, good bacteria. That bacteria communicate with one another and create more good bacteria. When you're taking in probiotics, natural probiotics, they're creating billions of good bacteria each time you take them in. So if you take them in 2, 3, 4, 5 times a day for a month, then you're creating a whole giant movement towards good bacteria. The good bacteria create new immune responses, and the second brain of the body, which is in the gastrointestinal system, now starts to work in an epigenetically positive way, meaning new bacteria, good bacteria, healthy bacteria start lessening bad bacteria, pathogenic bacteria. And then you start healing. At the end of the day, all healing is self-healing, but this is one way to put quality on your side. I mentioned last week, by the way, that olive oil and olives were so good for us. They are. One more study, the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism, shows that the olives and olive oil can help increase bone density. So that's why you see so little osteoporosis and brittle bones in people, mainly the older generation, living in the Mediterranean area, who daily consume their raw organic olive oil and eat lots of olives. I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on health nutrition. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome, all of you. I'm Gary Noll. No guest today. I have a commentary I'm going to share with you now. Then I'm going to give you two issues to address. Then I'm going to take us to our Understanding Human Nature segment of our program. Following that, plenty of time for your calls. First up, here is an important issue that must be addressed, and no one is talking about it. This is from Richard Ellian, and here's what it says. Genetically engineering ethical babies is a moral obligation, says Oxford professor. Genetically screening our offspring to make them better people is just, quote, responsible parenting. I'll quote this. Professor Julian Savulescu said that creating so-called designer babies could be considered a moral obligation, as it makes them grow up into ethically better children. The expert in practical ethics said that we should actively give parents the choice to screen out personality flaws in their children, as it meant that they are less likely to, quote, harm themselves or others. The academic, who is also editor-in-chief of the Journal of Medical Ethics, made his comments in an article in the latest edition of Reader's Digest. He explained that we are now in the middle of a genetic revolution, and that although screening for all but a few conditions remained illegal, it should be welcomed. He said that science is increasingly discovering that genes have a significant influence on personality, with certain genetic markers in embryo suggesting future characteristics. By screening in and screening out certain genes in the embryos, it would be possible to influence how your child turns out. In the end, he said that rational design would help lead to better, more intelligent, less violent societies in the future. Quote, surely trying to ensure that your children have the best or a good enough opportunity for a great life is responsible parenting. So, where genetic selection aims to bring out a trait that clearly benefits an individual in society, we should allow parents the choice. To do otherwise, it's consigned those who come after us to a ball and chain of our squeamishness and irrationality. Indeed, when it comes to screening out personality flaws, such as potential psychopathy, alcoholism, disposition to violence, we could argue that people have a moral obligation to select ethically better children. They are, after all, less likely to harm themselves and others. End quote. Now, this is not just any person making these statements. This is one of the two or three most respected geneticists in the world. And this is not just a geneticist. He also is the editor-in-chief of the Journal of Medical Ethics. And he's not just any academic. He is a major professor at Oxford University. So at every level, he is the insider's insider. He is a policymaker, not an opinion leader. And as in all circumstances, policymakers dictate what a future should be with a policy, and it is up to the opinion leaders in the media, in science, and of lesser standing to pass that message along. So, here's what it would mean in just lay language. That they would be able to come to you, and since they would be able to control and own and patent all of the specific qualities that you want, you could say, I want my child to be blue-eyed, blonde hair, tall, athletic, smart, never talks back, does everything they're told. And they would be able to select the genes, and you would have them implanted when the child is developing as an embryo. That's what they want us to do. Now, of course, think of all the people who immediately would sign up for that. How about all the people who try anything, say anything, do anything to get their kids into private schools? Here in Manhattan, it is a rite of passage for every parent who's got any money to use that money as a source of influence to make sure their child gets an advantage on all the other children, because in their mind, it's a dog-eat-dog world. It's all about competition, and we want the best. Now, mind you, the people with the money and the people with the power would be 100%, 1,000%, 1,000,000% behind this. They wouldn't have made this kind of public announcement unless they were way ahead and where they need us to believe they are taking us. This is the stage where they invite the public to not only want to become a part of it. This is the coming attraction where we all get excited by the upcoming movie. And we wait in line, stay out overnight to make sure we're first. You know, like the Black Fridays, where people stay in line to get that special discount on something at Walmart. What are your thoughts on this? What part of this issue are they not discussing? What do you feel about it? Do you support this or not? I'd like to hear your feedback on our talkback segment. Our number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. This comes from, and I won't read it all, read part of it, from The Nation magazine, as published on Alternet by Herman Schwartz. It is called Shock and Humiliation, How People Are Being Strip Searched for Trivial Offenses. Now, just in the last week, there was a woman in Florida who pulled up to a corner, and then as she started to go through the intersection after she had stopped, a car coming down the other side, a police car, turned around, came over, pulled her over, said she didn't come to a complete stop, what they call a rolling stop. So the guy got her out of the car and then looked in her possessions, then called in another car, and there on the road strip-searched her. As it turns out, the woman had her period, so the other police officer pulled the tampon out of her vagina, all in public view. Nothing will happen to the police. They're allowed to do it. The Supreme Court gave them that permission. A woman in an airport, a nursing mother, wanted to take her baby and a milk pump and was refused because she might be a terrorist. So TSA, you know, the new militarized police in our society, they demanded the woman actually use the milk pump and pump milk to prove that she wasn't in some way, I guess, going to use the milk pump or breast pump as a terrorist device, and she had to do so through great humiliation just to prove that she wasn't a terrorist. I've watched this. As much as I travel, I've seen so many issues like this. This is the latest, and I'll quote this article, part of it. This past April, the five conservative Supreme Court justices gave jail officials the right to strip and search every person arrested and jailed, even if the alleged offense is trivial and there is no reason to suspect danger of any kind. The ruling in Florence versus Board of Chosen Freeholders of County of Burlington compounds the assault on human dignity committed by the court in another 5-4 decision 11 years ago in Atwater versus City of Lago Vista, when it authorized a full custodial arrest for even trivial fine-only offenses like a temporarily unbuckled seatbelt. Our right to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures has once again been undermined by a narrow conservative majority concerned more with protecting public officials than with the right of ordinary Americans. Florence grew out of a mistake. On March 3, 2005, Albert Florence, an African-American businessman, his pregnant wife, and their 4-year-old son were in the family BMW when a New Jersey State Trooper pulled them over. Florence's wife was driving. No reason for the stop appears in the record, and no citation was ever issued. The trooper ordered the husband, sitting on the other side of the car, not driving, out of the car. A computer check disclosed that an arrest warrant for civil contempt had once been issued against him for non-payment of a fine, but failed to note that the fine had indeed been paid and the arrest warrant withdrawn. Florence had been stopped several times before, which he attributed to his being an African-American driving an expensive car. He therefore carried a certificate attesting to the cancellation of the warrant, which he showed the trooper. Nevertheless, he was handcuffed, arrested, and taken to the Burlington County Jail. The jail authorities conceded they had no suspicion of any wrongdoing by the gentleman, apart from the fine. Yet he was still forced to strip, shower with a delousing agent, open his mouth for inspection, hold out his arms and lift his genitals, and turn around so the officer could examine his buttocks. After 6 days in jail, without appearing before a magistrate, as required by law, Florence was transferred to the Essex County Jail. There was again strip search, again without any indication that he had done anything wrong. Only this time he was required to squat and cough, to undergo close examination of his ears, nose, mouth, scalp, armpits, inner thighs, and parts of his body. The next day he was brought before a judge who was appalled at his treatment and ordered his immediate release. So he sued the two counties, and he was joined in a class action by others subjected to the same treatment. What happened to him could have happened to anyone. Had the mother of the three at the center of the Atwater, who was handcuffed and jailed after she and her children were found to have an unbuckled seatbelt in the car, been arrested today, she could have also been subjected to a strip search. This is because state penal and traffic codes are stuffed with an array of such minor and often trivial offenses for which an arrest can be made wholly at the discretion of the police. Among those who joined the class action lawsuit filed by Florence were people who had been charged with having, and strip searched, a noisy muffler, an inoperable headlight, a too smooth tire, and in one case, there was a defective windshield wiper, and one person was stopped in strip search because he had parked in a no parking zone, and another was charged with riding a bicycle without an audible bell that you could hear on his bicycle. All were strip searched. In D.C., a 12-year-old girl was arrested for eating a French fry in a metro station. Again, she was arrested and strip searched. A Kentucky woman was charged with failing to appear in traffic court when the judge provided her with the wrong appearance date. She was arrested and strip searched. And people of color, like Mr. Florence, are especially vulnerable to such police tactics. For in many cases, the arrests and subsequent searches are really for the offenses of driving while black, being in the wrong neighborhood, or talking back to the police. Political protests and protesters like the civil rights workers who marched in the South and the Occupy Wall Street demonstrators, especially, and anyone protesting anything today, are met in a hostile environment, and they're vulnerable to abuses made possible by the Florence and Atwater decisions. So there you have it. So today you can be arrested for anything. Even if in the case of Florence you had a statement from the court showing you'd paid your fine. In that moment, the state trooper could have decided, yes, there's nothing you've done. You're just a passenger in a vehicle, and this is an invalid arrest warrant because you paid your fine. But instead, they chose to arrest him and put him 7 days in jail and take him through multiple searches. Here's my concern. My concern, and I've made it very clear, unlike many who are in the liberal movement, that I do believe that when you're indifferent and believe there are no conspiracies ever, at any time, for any reason, that's just nonsense. Well, there are conspiracies. And there's racism, rampant. And there's profiling. And when you feel that the government should be there to protect you and you should never criticize it, and you should just continue to support massive bureaucracies, including the police bureaucracies, the TSA, the militarization of these bureaucracies, the giant, almost cancerous, metastasized growth of all state, local, and federal bureaucracies, then what exactly do you anticipate the outcome to be when there is zero accountability? Even when they're found guilty, there is no fines, there's no punishment at all. And they have the power of the state and the power of how all these laws, like the National Defense Authorization Act, how they can be used against you. Then exactly what do you call it at that point? When groups of individuals have selectively gotten together and proposed legislation that has the intention, no matter how it is couched, in depriving you of your rights, including those who are used to protest, used to engaging in using their freedom of speech. But maybe I missed it. Maybe in my travel to Oklahoma yesterday, where I was studying hydrofracking and the effects on people, maybe I missed the outpouring of all the people at MSNBC and all the major groups in the United States and all the unions, that maybe they protested the National Defense Authorization Act, or maybe they protested the militarization of our police. Maybe they protested the Patriot Act, the Homeland Security Act. Maybe they protested racial profiling. Maybe they protested, and I just missed it. I don't think so. I believe that we have in America, and have had for some time, a complete and total police state. I believe that every single person that protests, who makes themselves known on the internet, in person, against the government, is now on an enemy's list. And gee whiz, the New York Times show us that was the case with the FDA and 21 of its own officials who wanted to come out and tell us the truth about dangerous medical devices and drugs, but were prevented from doing so. Oh, that's a conspiracy. Yeah. 20,000 illegal wiretaps and invasions of their computers. Any protest about that? So what does it mean when the vast majority, what does it mean when 99% of the public, angels on their side, of course, right, do nothing to protest the gross, massive abuse of our civil rights, our constitutional rights, and our Bill of Rights, habeas corpus, unreasonable search and seizures? What's it say when the massive majority of people will vote for either a corporate Democrat or corporate Republican without considering the likely outcome? What does it mean when anyone can be stopped, anyone strip searched for any reason, and everyone else will simply look the other way or think, that's unfortunate, thank God it wasn't me? What happens when we all hide from the abuses in our society, the financial abuses, the corporate abuses, the election abuses, the media abuses, the institutional abuses? Because today, in this hour, we're not being abused. What does that tell us about the 99%? I don't want to hear about the 1%. We all know what their character is made out of. We all know what they're capable of doing. I'm concerned about the abuses, the neglect, the disdain, the intentional arrogance, and the conceit, and the indifference, and the participation by the 99%. That's my concern. We didn't get to where we're at today without an awful lot of people being complicit in the crimes against humanity. Just like we'll all support, not all, but watch how Americans rally around Israel and the United States when they finally go after Iran. Because that's what we've done repeatedly from Vietnam forward. Those are my personal views. I stand behind them. Now your time for your opportunity to share yours. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Let us, and I'm not taking any health and nutrition calls now. I'm just taking on these issues today. Let's say hello to Paul from Staten Island. Hi, Paul, your turn.
Yeah, Gary, yeah. It's like the financial and political elite have bought up everything. Every significant financial, environmental, and religious institution and political party is controlled and bought by their financial power. And,
Paul, hold on. Back up. I'd like for you to reconsider your thought for a moment and see if there's a different perspective you could share. We all know, anyone with an IQ above 7 knows who the people are who are orchestrating the takeover of our country, Citizens United, the ALEC corporations and their state control of the bills and laws within the states. We know about each administration. We know who takes us to war. We know about the military-industrial complex. We know about Chase Manhattan and Citigroup. We know about these. Why can't we ever ask what level of participation do we support in their having power over us? If I accept what you said in its current context, I would believe that we are a nation of pure victims with no opportunity to fight back or look at the way that we help them maintain the power over us. What would you do to give the responsibility also for the people who vote in an election without looking deep enough to see, will this really make any fundamental outcome in the larger consequences of our lives? Paul, your thoughts, please.
Yes, hello.
Yes.
Yes, you know, you're 100% right about, you know, it is really a question of every citizen examining where they are, what they're purchasing, what they're what kind of finances they're using. And like you said before, getting out of the credit cards and the banks and, you know, those kind of things, getting down to the roots of change.
Paul, do you have, how many shirts do you own, approximately?
Probably about
10,
20.
Okay. Would you do something for us right now while I'm on the phone with other people? Would you go in and look to see where those shirts are made and come back and tell us? I'm going to hold your line open. Would you do that for us right now? Every shirt.
I have one right here, but actually it's fortunate that I know I do have some foreign ones, but I have one here made in the USA, Hawaii.
Okay, now, made in the USA is not the same as being made with fair trade or union labor where a person made a living wage. You could have products made in Mexico, made in Bangladesh, shipped into the United States, where the buttons are put on, and then you think you're buying an American-made. I'm talking about going out of your way to look at the background of the company you're buying from to see what are the conditions under which workers worked in order to make that. I want you to take a moment and tell us where your clothes are made. I'm going to keep your line open. Gwen, now, while you're doing that, let's say hello to Paul. Let's say hello to Megan from New Jersey. Hi, Megan.
Hi, yes, Gary. Thank you very much for taking my call. I just wanted to comment about the. I'm sorry. I'm nervous, and I actually got upset while I was waiting on hold. I live in New Jersey, and I've been suffering from a debilitating back injury for a couple of years that I got hurt on the job waitressing, and I've been. Struggling to get welfare, medical assistance, workers' comp assistance, and going through that, I was a victim of domestic violence through a family member, and the cops came and have harassed me, and I got dragged out of the house. I got arrested twice. I have no money, no financial assets, no nothing at all. The judge would not hear anything. No one would explain my rights to me. I could not get a public defender. I got a strip search at the Ocean County jail and had to go through it twice. And I still have an outstanding warrant, and I don't have the money to pay it. I've had an outstanding warrant multiple times because I missed a court date. I tried to explain I didn't have arrangements to get transportation, and it was a family domestic violence situation, and you know, because of that. And I just wanted to. For someone who doesn't have a computer, no access, I don't have any transportation, any financial assistance, no medical assistance, no health assistance. I could barely walk. I have to use a cane. Luckily, there was a couple somewhat decent police officer that I did come in contact with,
Here's what you can do. We do have a lot of very conscientious people who listen to this program, including lawyers, who are licensed to practice in New Jersey. What I want you to do is to send me, Gary Nall, 2307 Broadway, New York, New York, 10024. Send me, just write out in handwriting, print it out, your story with the contact number. You have a phone because you're calling in now. I will then ask now if there are people in New Jersey who are in the legal profession, or sociologists or people who would like to help you in with your issue. I'm sure there will be. So once I get your letter and how people can reach you, then we'll match someone who can help you and see if we can't help you out of your current circumstance, or at least to alter your current circumstance. But I'm happy to do that. Again, Gary Nall, 2307 Broadway, New York, New York, 10024. Okay, and anyone in New Jersey who is would like to pro bono help this woman, please contact my staff, one of my staff attorneys in our office, Scott London. Okay? Thank you. Let's say hello to Dan from Queens. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Gary. Thanks for taking my call. I commend you. I applaud your courage in addressing a topic that is almost taboo in present-day American media, and that is the U.S.-Israeli relations. Very, very quickly, in your opinion, when did we become the big brother to Israel? I mean big good brother, good big brother. And why, in your opinion, has that happened so that we're practically, I think, hostage to Israeli foreign policy?
We do not have our own policy. Israel writes our policy for the Middle East, and it started back with Reagan's administration when it really took hold, but it gained enormous strength under Clinton's administration. And it was geopolitical because of where Israel sits and wanting to have an opportunity for Israel to be our proxy aggressive position in that area of the world. Just like right now, it is unquestionable that Israel has done false flag operations. You can almost bet your life that they were behind the killing of the five Iranian nuclear scientists. Probably, I can't prove it yet, but I would raise suspicions they were behind the Sinai massacre. They have their own agenda. Their agenda right now is extremely hawkish. They control the Knesset, their parliament, by a thin margin. And they bluff a lot, but in their bluffing, we overreact. When you spread as much fear around our political and media as the AIPAC does, the Israeli lobby, and you develop this idea that you can only get elected in the United States by having the Jewish vote, which is not true, but then you start as if all Jewish people believe in the same outcome, which is not true. You have a full spectrum from the ultra-Orthodox to the very liberal and progressives who want to see justice for both the Palestinian and the Jewish people. But those are not the people who are in power now. The majority of people living in Israel, by every consensus, do not want to see a war with Iran because they're wise enough to know the consequences. But the people who want war with Iran are the neocons. These are the people who build the bombs, who profit directly from war. They are the ones who profited, like the Halliburtons, from Iraq, from Vietnam, from every place we are in the world. They make the money from it. So they're the ones behind the scene. And we will continue to challenge them wherever we feel that it's necessary. Thank you, Dan, for your comments. Malik from Chicago. Hi, Malik. You're on.
Hello, Gary. Thank you for taking my call. I want to talk to you about solar flare. And I'm planning to install a gas generator. And I contact my gas supply company, and they assure me that in case of any outage or no electricity, I will receive 100% of the gas. And I want to double check with you. And
I would. You're doing the right thing. You're absolutely doing the right thing. So continue doing that. And in the month of October, closer to when the flares will begin, I will do an entire day workshop in New York that will be broadcast throughout the world for people who would like to also be up to date on the latest things they can do, depending upon the circumstances that they're faced with. So you're on the right track there, Malik. Chris from Queens. Chris, your turn.
Gary, I'd like to make two quick comments. I'd like to comment on the strip searching and the quick comment on the 99% that you said. If one speaks to any person who lived in a country that was invaded by the Nazis during World War II, and if there was any resistance within that country, these people who are now in their 80s, many of them, will tell you, they will recognize immediately that what you were describing before, the humiliating and outrageous strip searching that you were describing, they will immediately recognize it, and they would tell you that that is fascistic behavior on the face of it. And these people can be conservative. They have nothing to do with any kind of, you know, these political labels that we slap on people here, because they lived through it and they know what it is. In America, I don't think Americans recognize it as such, because either they haven't had the personal experience, but also because they do not see themselves as citizens. They see themselves as consumers, first and foremost, and that's another discussion. And one more comment I would like to make regarding the 99% that I think is very important. A lot of these media people who are very highly paid, very highly, I'm sure you're very well aware, they make tens of millions of dollars yearly salaries, these people, and basically offer nothing to us anymore. These people are not part of the 99%. They may not be the 1% necessarily, but they serve a high and holy purpose for the 1%. They're not part of the 99%, and I think that distinction needs to be made, because they play a very critical role. That's all I wanted to say.
I appreciate that.
Thank you.
I have said many times, I will continue to prove it, we live in a fascistic state where the top leaders of industry and the top levels of government work together for a common goal. It is not to the benefit of us. And finally today, before we go into our last segment, I'm going to go back to Paul from Staten Island. Let me just mention that I don't often make recommendations. It's in its last week, I believe, and there is a play, a small one-woman play that I saw the other night. And it's about Bronte, B-R-O-N-T-E. Now, those of you in this audience who study literature or history certainly know that the three Bronte sisters, Charlotte, Emily, and Anne Bronte, and who lived in England, and it was none of them lived a long life. They were raised with a great intellectual curiosity, and they all wrote. In fact, Charlotte Bronte is well known for her novel Jane Eyre, which talked about the triumph against adversity. She died at 38 before Jane Eyre was published. Emily Bronte, her sister, wrote Wuthering Heights, which any of you have read the book or watched the film. It was about passion, heartbreak, and social commentary in mid-19th century England. And Anne Bronte, the youngest of the sisters, also died young. And she was a teacher, and she wrote some poems, but she also wrote The Tenant of Wildfell Hall, which talked about Victorian England, and it's a great work in feminist literature, and she died at 28. This play is about, and by the way, they all wrote under pseudonyms because no one could believe that a woman could write as well as a man. So, for example, Wuthering Heights was written under the pseudonym Alice Bell. And not even their own father, who was a minister, knew that they were the author of these great works. And in any case, this is a woman who played the role of Charlotte, talking about what it was like in just a short period of time to lose her mother and her brother and her sisters, and what her life was like. It's a very small play, but brilliantly acted, one of those rare gems of original writing. So if you have a chance, it's off-Broadway, but it's I think, over on 47th Street. It's got about a week to run. This is one of those plays I would definitely recommend. It's called Bronte, B-R-O-N-T-E. Hope that you get to it and hope you enjoy it. Now, for those of you we have to say goodbye to, the rest can continue listening. Let's go back to Paul from Staten Island. Hi, Paul. You back on the line?
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah, you checkmated me because out of the 20 shirts, I have four that are American-made.
Okay, where are the others made, Paul?
India.
Exploited
Indonesia,
labor. Exploited labor.
China.
Exploited labor.
Wow.
Okay, now, let me ask you this. What kind of work do you do, Paul?
I work for the city.
Okay. What do you do for the city?
I drive a bus.
Okay. What would you think if you walked into a building in the city and there were 4,000 women sitting in a decrepit old building working 18 hours and a man was walking up and down the aisle with a switch in his hand and in the other hand he had a stopwatch and he would stop at a woman and time how long it took her to sew a zipper in or to do a pocket, and if she didn't do it in the right time, he would smack her over the head with a switch. The woman could say nothing and do nothing. She's only allowed up to go to the bathroom or anything, get a drink of water twice a day. Then late at night, she walks home, and you see hundreds of thousands of women walking home late at night to work and home when they get home to make their family's meal the next day, do their cleaning, and then get a couple hours sleep and come back. Would you be of the same mindset to mindlessly go ahead and buy something knowing that you were supporting slave labor and supporting the abuse of women?
No, absolutely not.
Okay, then why don't you throw those clothes away, Paul? Don't give them away. Throw them away. They're made with slave labor. They're abusive to women and human rights. And don't shop again in the stores that bought them. Go to the fleas market, farmer's market, look up on the internet and find places that are made with union labor and with conscious effort where people could actually be proud of the fact that they helped make you something because they were not exploited in the process. Does that sound fair or unfair?
Absolutely unfair because, you know, I was actually, since you spoke about this a while back, I was just thinking about that transition has to be made and it's really a slow not a slow process, but it's like you're saying, finding the places where you can buy them and just making the transition out of the system that is so detrimental to the people around us.
Okay. I appreciate it. So you're in your transition stage now, right?
Oh, most definitely, yes.
Only support in your purchases that which supports people at a level of efficacy, decency, and spirituality. Are we together on this?
100%, yes.
Thank you very much, Paul. I appreciate you calling, and I appreciate your honesty and telling us this. I'll take one last call. Megan from New Jersey. Megan, your turn. Megan's not there? Okay. Good. Then we are out of time. I want to thank you all for taking your time to share your thoughts with us today. I will get to our continuing our understanding of human nature tomorrow. I have a lot more to talk about tomorrow. And also, I'm going to take on the cause of this Marine who was locked up in a mental institution, not because of anything that he showed that he was a danger to himself or society, but simply because he was writing about what he felt were the, quote, taking a cynical stance towards politics, mistrusting authority, endorsing democratic practices, and displaying an inquisitive, imaginative outlook, end quote. So that gets you locked in a mental institution? Okay. We'll take a look at that. I'm Gary Nall. Have a nice day, everyone.
Well, I got a woman way over town that's good.